All right, let's dive in today. We're going deep on a case that I think really changed the game in the world of finance.
You're talking about INRI WorldCom, right? The securities litigation case from back in 2004.
That's the one. Big impact. I mean, it really threw a spotlight on how much responsibility financial pros have, you know, when a company goes public.
Absolutely. Like, before this, a lot of underwriters figured, hey, if the audited financials look good, we're golden. This case flipped the script.
It made everyone think twice, that's for sure. Especially about those seemingly foolproof, you know, audited financial statements. So for everyone listening, today's big question is, when can these underwriters not just take the auditor's word for it?
And let me tell you, the answer to that question has had a massive ripple effect. It's changed how we understand liability under Section 11 of the Securities Act of 1933. No small potatoes.
Right. You can't talk about this case without remembering what went down at WorldCom.
Oh, man. Talk about a mess.
A huge accounting scandal.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about an estimated $11 billion, billion with a B, in accounting irregularities.
And it wasn't some complicated scheme either. Mostly, they were just improperly capitalizing line costs.
Basically making their expenses look way smaller than they were.
Exactly. And then, on top of all that, what do? They go ahead with a bond offering for $11.9 billion.
With registration statements that, surprise, surprise, were full of these same cooked-up financials.
Oh, and let's not forget Arthur Andersen. They're more than just the auditors signing off on all this.
Right. Arthur Andersen gave out those comfort letters, too, right? To make the underwriters feel extra confident.
Double verification, or so it seemed. And who were these underwriters for this massive bond offering? Just some small-time players.
Oh, yeah, just some names you might recognize. Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, among others. You know, the little guys.
Right, household names. So when the truth about the fraud finally came out and the lawsuits started flying, what was their defense?
Hey, we trusted Arthur Andersen. What more could you possibly expect from us?
And that's what makes the WorldCom case so crucial, right? The court basically said, hold on a minute, that's not good enough.
It really changed the game in terms of what's expected from underwriters when it comes to doing their own homework.
They couldn't just point fingers at the auditors anymore.
So you can't understand this case without understanding Section 11 of the Securities Act.
The bread and butter of securities law, right?
Exactly. For those who maybe haven't gotten to this part of their studies yet, Section 11 basically says that if there's something seriously wrong or missing in a registration statement,
and it turns out to be misleading,
then various parties involved can be held liable.
That includes the company issuing the securities, obviously.
And your directors, too.
And this is where it gets interesting for our discussion, the underwriters.
But like with most things in the law, there's an exception.
Right.
A way out, yeah. It's called the due diligence defense.
Like a get out of jail free card.
Not quite. More like a we did our best card. Underwriters can avoid liability if they can prove they really dug deep and had solid reasons to believe everything in that registration statement was accurate.
Not just accurate, though.
Right. And not misleading either. It's a two-parter.
And this is where things get a little technical.
We have to talk about expertise versus non-expertise sections in these filings.
Like, I get it. Some parts of a registration statement, like audited financials, those are prepared by independent experts. So naturally, those would be considered, what was the word, expertise.
Exactly. But, and here's the key, for everything else, anything that isn't considered expertise, and that's a lot of the document.
Underwriters absolutely have to do their own research.
No two ways about it. They can't just rely on anyone else.
But the WorldCom case really clarified that, even for the expertise stuff.
Like those audited financials everyone was focused on.
The underwriters still can't just blindly trust the auditor.
Nope. They have a duty to look for warning signs, to be on the lookout for anything that seems off.
So what the court was really looking at was whether there were any red flags that should have made the underwriters dig deeper.
Red flags, exactly. Like little alarms going off saying, hey, take a closer look here.
And this is how we got the red flags doctrine, right? It's become a cornerstone of securities law.
It really has. What it means is, even if the financials have a stamp of approval from a fancy accounting firm, underwriters can't just assume everything is kosher. They have to look for inconsistencies, ask tough questions.
They can't just coast. So let's get down to brass tacks. What kind of red flags did the court actually point to in this case?
Well, one of the big ones, and this is something anyone with a basic understanding of the industry would notice,
was how WorldCom's line costs to revenue ratio stacked up against their competitors.
It was way off. Like, they were reporting numbers around 40%.
And their competitors.
Those guys were more in the 50% or higher range. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, 10 percentage points is not chump change in that industry.
It should have been a massive red flag, right? Like, how are you managing to keep your costs so much lower than everyone else? What's the secret sauce?
And that should have prompted some serious questions about how WorldCom was actually classifying their expenses.
Exactly. And that's not even getting into the more complex stuff. You didn't need to be a forensic accountant to spot that discrepancy.
What else stood out to the court? What other red flags were they waving?
Okay, here's another one. Picture this. WorldCom's stock price is going down, down, down during this whole period.
Not a good look.
But at the same time, their financial statements are painting this rosy picture.
Strong performance, everything's great.
Exactly. But usually, those two things go hand in hand.
Right. If a company's doing well, their stock price should be doing well.
So when you see that disconnect, it's a big warning sign.
Something's not adding up.
And there is even more. Beyond just the numbers themselves, there was a lot of chatter in the telecom industry about WorldCom's strategy.
People were skeptical.
Very much so. They were going on this huge buying spree, acquiring company after company.
And though through acquisition.
Right. But a lot of people were questioning whether this was sustainable.
If it was even a good idea in the first place.
Precisely. And the court basically said, look, these weren't some hidden secrets. The skepticism was out in the open.
The underwriters should have been aware of it.
And they should have investigated it. So all those comfort letters Arthur Anderson provided,
they didn't really protect the underwriters in the end, did they?
Not at all. And that's a big takeaway from this case. Comfort letters aren't a free pass. They only cover very specific things.
Like a snapshot in time.
Exactly. They don't guarantee that the company is in good shape overall or that they're going to stay that way.
So underwriters still have to do their own digging.
Due diligence is still a must. They can't just outsource their responsibility to the auditors.
What about those relationships the underwriters had with WorldCom, though?
Ugh, that's another piece of the puzzle. You see, these underwriters, they weren't just neutral parties. They had other deals going on with WorldCom.
So there's a potential conflict of interest.
Big time. And the court didn't like that one bit. They said, look, those standard disclosures about potential conflicts, those boilerplate statements everyone throws in,
they weren't enough.
Nope. The underwriters needed to be upfront and specific about those relationships.
So this case really highlights that underwriters can't just sit back and passively accept information, even if it's coming from a big-name accounting firm.
They need to be active, ask questions, and really investigate.
It all comes back to some fundamental legal principles, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We've got Section 11, and that's strict liability.
Balanced by the due diligence defense.
And this all revolves around the idea of the prudent man.
That always sounds so old-fashioned to me.
I know, right? It's like something out of a Charles Dickens novel.
But it's a crucial concept in the law. It basically asks, what would a reasonable, careful person in the underwriter's shoes have done?
Would they have investigated more? Would they have asked different questions? That's the standard.
The WorldCom court actually looked back at another big case to help define what prudent really means for underwriters.
You're talking about Escott v. Barkris, right? From 1968.
That's the one. Another landmark case about underwriter liability.
And the key takeaway from Barkris is the same as from WorldCom. Underwriters can't just blindly trust what they're told. They have to do their own homework.
And Judge Cote, the judge in the WorldCom case, she really drove that point home, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. She had this great line. Without investigation, we can never know what might have been uncovered.
It's so true. If you don't look, you'll never find.
Exactly. And that statement has become a guiding principle in so many securities cases since then.
So after all this went down, after this massive case, things actually changed in the world of finance, right? It wasn't just a legal decision that stayed in the tour room.
Oh, it had huge practical consequences. I mean, underwriters everywhere started taking due diligence way more seriously.
They had to up their game.
They absolutely did. They developed all these new checklists, these really thorough procedures to make sure they were covering all their bases.
And now, in deal rooms across the country, red flag analysis is taught as a core skill, right?
Absolutely. You have to learn how to spot those warning signs.
And we even saw the rise of these specialized firms, right? Third-party due diligence firms.
Totally. They came in to provide these independent assessments, these extra layers of scrutiny.
Because even big financial institutions realized they needed more help they needed more expertise to really dig deep.
They couldn't just rely on their in-house teams anymore. The stakes were too high. And it's really interesting to see how these principles from WorldCom are playing out today, especially with all the talk about SPACs.
Special purpose acquisition companies. Another area where due diligence is front and center.
Exactly. Because when things go wrong with a SPAC, and they often do,
the question is always, did the underwriters do enough? Did they really investigate?
It's the same fundamental issue. And it all boils down to this. Are you willing to look beyond the surface? Are you willing to ask the tough questions?
That's the lesson of WorldCom. That's the lesson for anyone involved in taking a company public.
And it's a lesson that keeps evolving. I mean, think about how much financial analysis has changed even since 2004.
It's a whole different world. We've got artificial intelligence now, algorithms that can analyze massive amounts of data.
Which raises a really interesting question and one I'll leave you with today. How will the prudent man standard keep up with all this new technology?
What will due diligence look like in the future? What will be expected of underwriters in this brave new world of finance?
Something to think about.
That's it for our deep dive today. See you next time.
See you there.